Welcome to the Engage Your City Breakout. We are so glad you're here. It encourages us so much to see that you want to engage your city. That's a really encouraging thing. My name is Rivers Parton. I have the pleasure of working for the SEND Network and serving on the spouse development team. And so my whole job is to work with church planter wives, which is literally the best job ever. Cassie's going to say she has the best job, but We arm wrestle over it sometimes. I have the privilege of introducing you to Cassie, our speaker today. Before I do that, though, I'm going to say there are more people that will come in, and so you might want to scoot to the, maybe come this way and this side come this way so that there's room on the end, if you don't mind. I have the privilege to introduce Cassie to you today. Cassie Hammett is our speaker who's going to talk to us about engaging the city, and it's such a, I've gotten to hear Cassie talk about this at our other gatherings, and Cassie is speaking from a place of doing this. And so you're getting a real practitioner today who's served in a lot of different ways in engaging the city. Cassie is the founder of The Hub. The Hub reaches people in poverty, homelessness, and sexual exploitation. Cassie also serves as the national strategist with Sin Relief, helping enhance our ministries all over North America. And Cassie is married to Brent, and she's the mama of two internationally adopted girls. And I am just so excited for you to get to hear from her today, from her heart, and from a place of doing this and serving with people and getting to share her faith and equipping others to do that. So I'm really excited for our time. And I wanted to have every minute, so I'm going to pray really quick for her. Father, thank you for my friend Cassie and for the many ways that you have given her the experience of engaging her city and engaging dear ones that are far from you and you bringing them near into the family. And so, God, we pray that this time is an encouragement and a challenge and that your name would be exalted in this hour that we get to spend together. It's in your name, Jesus, that we pray. Amen. Good morning, everybody. My name is Cassie, like she said, and I am here all the way from Louisiana. Anyone ever been to Louisiana? Yeah, you're going to, oh yeah, I guess all of you are probably coming, not all of you, but who's coming next month to my state? Yeah, okay, great. Well, this is my first time in Calgary. It's so beautiful here. I'm super thankful to be a part of this event and to be a part of SEND Network and coming alongside of heroes like you guys who are in the trenches, building the church, building the kingdom of God. So I have an hour with you. They were like, hey, can you talk about probably the most important topic for 45 minutes? So I'm going to do my very best to speed through some content. And then I will stick around after and give you my contact information if you have further questions or want further equipping in this topic, because there's no way we could cover in 45 minutes what we need to cover when it comes to engaging your city. So just a little background about me so that you're like, who is not like sitting there like, who is this girl and why is she the one teaching? I think it's important for you to know the voices that pour into you and sort of their perspective. So like she said, I do run an organization in Louisiana. I founded that organization 16 years ago when I was young and dumb and didn't know what I was doing. So 16 years ago, I founded an organization that exists to serve those experiencing material poverty, homelessness, and sex trafficking and sexual exploitation. I've been doing the work of that over the last 16 years. We've duplicated our model across the country in the United States. So I've gotten to walk alongside other cities who are now doing the work of our organization where they are. I think what's important about me when it comes to the topic of what I'm about to talk about, I am not a church planter. I've never planted a church. I've been a part of a few church plants before, but I do have two unique perspectives that I think are going to be helpful for you as we talk about this. One is my 16 years of experience in the trenches of the city that I'm in. I think that is invaluable to you to be able to sort of get a good perspective of reality when it comes to the brokenness that exists in our cities. Because if you live anywhere, there is brokenness there. If you live anywhere, these things exist, right? There's none of us who are like, no, we're good. No, everything's fine in our city. If that's you, raise your hand because we all want to live there. All right. So one, my perspective is 16 years of walking with some of the most vulnerable in the city that I am in and cities across the country of in United States. The second perspective is that the model of the Hub actually uses the local church as the fuel
for restoring the lives of the vulnerable. So the way that the hub is sort of positioned is we don't do the work of or for the local church. We actually believe that the local church is God's chosen vehicle for restoring everything back to him. Right? We believe that. A lot of nonprofits will sort of point a finger at the church and say, well, we're doing the work because what? You're not doing the work. That is not the position that we have ever taken. So what we do at the Hub is we come alongside of the local church, equip and train and provide opportunities for the local church to engage the most vulnerable in the city, and we serve sort of as a guide to doing that. So the second part of my perspective is probably most valuable to you, is that I have spent the last 16 years also hand in hand with the local church, hand in hand with pastors who are looking at the brokenness of a city and scratching their head over how to even make a dent in it, and being a part of walking them through equipping and training and watching whole churches get shifted towards the injustices in a city and watching what happens, not just for the vulnerable, but for that church. So my perspective is twofold. And I don't think you're going to find that very often. Someone who's most of my life is spent in the trenches with people who are walking some of the most broken circumstances. And also, I've spent most of my life walking with the local church. And I love the local church and the expression of God's kingdom that it is in any city that it exists. So that's a little background about me. I want you to know that because I want you to know that what I'm talking about today is from actual experience. This is not theory. This is not theology class. This is, hey, I'm just going to give you brass tacks information today from 16 years of doing both of those things together. And again, we only have an hour. You're not going to walk out of here with a three-step process for how to do this. But my hope is that this is a conversation starter for you. Or it is a continuing thought of what does it look like for the church that I lead or the church that I'm a part of to actually engage the city that we're in. So we're going to hop right in. So I want to put a few statements up on the screen just to give us sort of a grid for what we're talking about today. Your church, this is going to sound elementary, but just stick with me for a second. Your church is called to expand the kingdom of God in your city. Agreed? Yes, of course. If you say no, then we should probably talk after. I mean, that's above my pay grade, but somebody needs to talk to you. Your church is called not to just plant your church. Your church is connected to this bigger thing that is happening. And I think it's good for us to remember that this bigger thing is happening whether we engage in it or not. God is expanding his kingdom on the earth, right? And inviting us into that, inviting us into reconciliation through things like planting a church. All right, so planting a church is a tool or a conduit for this bigger idea of God's kingdom expanding wherever you are, heaven to earth, right? That's what we're called to. No big deal. It's kind of a big pressure job, but heaven to earth. When the kingdom of God expands, your city as a result becomes a better, more just, and we're going to talk about this, but more just place to live. Do you agree? When God's kingdom expands anywhere, that place becomes better, including our lives, right? When God expands his presence in our lives, we become better, right? We are healed. We are restored. So the same is true anywhere God's kingdom is being expanded, right? Is that that city should be becoming a better, more just place to live. The people in your church are called to live the life of a Jesus follower. They are not called specifically just to be a member of your church. They are not called specifically to be a religious person. They are called to live the life of a Jesus follower. And that is a very clear calling, is it not? And we can find all the information we need in the New Testament about what that means. And we're going to talk about that today. Jesus transforms sinful people. Raise your hand if that's you. Every single person, even this little one here, can raise their hand, right? Jesus transforms sinful people into people who can see the world through his eyes. That's mind-blowing to think that Jesus has the power to change sinful people whose eyes are mostly turned inward. into people who can have his eyes and his mind and his heart. That's insane, right? Like, we could all go home and chew on that for the rest of the time we're here, right? It's Jesus who does that, though. It's no amount of works on our end. It's Jesus who transforms us into people who see people the way that he does. He does the transforming work. Jesus transforms us into just people, people who seek justice, right? That is what it means to be a Jesus follower and to mimic the way that he lived. His spirit inside of us gives us the ability to have his eyes and turns on a fire inside of us to see things that are unjust and make them right. That is who God is. Okay. And we're going to talk about that too. Justice isn't something just to do. Okay. We often think about justice as a doing word. Agreed? Yeah, it's actually a way of being. And we're going to talk about the difference between those two things. And these sentences are just setting us up so that we can know where we're headed. Next two are engaging your city, truly engaging your city, will always involve your city's greatest needs. So when you're planting in a city, if you are not bumping up against that city's greatest needs, then I would have a question on whether you're actually engaging your city. Now, you may be planting a church, but it is quite possible to be planting a church and not engaging the city around you truly. You pop up a church and whoever walks through the door is who you're engaging, right? But truly engaging your city will always involve your city's greatest needs. And again, every city has needs. Engaging your city will also always include the vulnerable, the poor, and the injustices that exist. And this is where we're headed today, is what role does any church or the church play when it comes to justice and poverty and vulnerable populations? What role do we play? Do we play a role? That's a question we're going to answer. And what does that look like? So the first thing I want to talk about is justice and the church. So I don't know contextually if this is something you've experienced. If you've ever been on Twitter, which is the darkest place that exists, agreed? Twitter is the worst. If you want to feel bad about the world, just take a few scrolls through Twitter and you will see the worst version of everything, right? Well, over the last few years, this idea of justice in the church, or anyone heard the terms social justice? Okay, it's kind of like, ooh, like, because what have we seen? Has it been primarily positive messaging? No, what we've seen culturally happening, not just over the last 5 years, but specifically over the last 5 years, is we have seen two camps forming. When it comes to the idea of justice and the church, we've seen two camps, and those two camps have sort of fallen into, there's social justice in one hand over here, and what's over here? The gospel. That's what has happened. There's been sort of a line drawn in the sand that says those two things exist sort of separately. And if we care about the gospel, then we are not about social justice. Does that make sense? Anyone ever seen that kind of language? So I have not been to seminary. I don't have letters behind my name enough to go deeply into that. But as someone who for the last 16 years has woken up every day, feet to the ground, to do the work of social justice through the local church, it has been a very tragic cultural shift in my mind, because what I know to be true is that we serve the God of justice. And anything he does is just. And everywhere he moves, things are reconciled and justice happens. Anytime his people step into dark places, he executes justice through them. And my problem with the church shying away from social justice because of cultural norms is that I'm walking with people who are living under thousands of pounds of actual justice issues. And then I look at the church wider that are saying, but we care about their souls. Okay, their souls are buried under thousands of pounds of actual justice issues, injustices that the pressure of is pushing down on their lives, and they are literally suffering and dying and going to hell because the church is too afraid to step into the injustices that exist in our world and make them right. And often, when we care about their souls but aren't willing to sort of unpack the injustices that exist in their life, we don't get the chance to speak to their souls. Because for someone standing in front of you who hasn't eaten in days, who exists in oppressive systems, who is in vulnerable populations, not being served, doesn't have the things that they need, pushed to the outcast of society, standing in front of you, the hurdles that exist for them to understand and receive the gospel all are in injustice. And when we lack the desire to engage in that, what we actually end up doing is we lose the opportunity to give them the greatest treasure that exists, which is the gospel, and for the gospel to go forth in their life. We may say it with our mouth. We may say, hey, we may recognize that you're in need, and we may speak to their soul. But when we step over all of their realities, we are not actually seeing them. We are seeing an agenda and the gospel as an agenda. When the reality is that for the gospel to go forth in someone's life and truly produce fruit, the church has to do the heavy lifting of clearing the path for that, of making it possible for someone to hear, respond, receive the gospel, making it possible for someone to be discipled. All the things that come really easy for us, right? We go to church on Sundays, we go to small groups, we are being discipled, whatever it looks like, very easy decisions for us. For someone under the 1,000 pounds of injustice, not easy decisions, right? So I want to free us up in this session to be okay, right? To admit that, yes, the church is called to justice. Whatever word semantics you want to put on it, let's remove the semantic war and say, yeah, we have to own this. We have to own the fact that, one, we're called to it, and two, we have the only answer. Like, this is the most tragic part, is that the government doesn't have the answer to true injustices. Social programs don't actually address the actual problem. We have the actual answer for injustices in our world, and coupled with the actual authority to do something about it. Because what we also know to be true, I was just reading it this morning, that Jesus sent out his disciples and he gave them his what? Authority to go and do the things that he was asking them to do. So we have the answer and we have the authority, and we don't have to shy away from these things. We have the ability to engage them. So just a little soapbox moment for social justice in the church. So the other problem with justice and how the church sort of views it is that the very traditional way a church will look at the injustices in a city or the vulnerable or materially poor, or whatever category you want to sort of fill in the blank, is the church will look at those things and will then in response develop a very programmed approach to those things, right? So, okay, I don't know in this region of the world what it would be called, but in my region where I'm from, which is the United States, but more specifically the South, right? We use words, often churches use words like missions or outreach, right? There's a department of the church that's sort of relegated to doing the serving in the city, right? That's pretty traditional. Also, what's pretty traditional is in that model, it's the same 20% of people doing all the work in the city. Do you agree? It's all the same crazy 20 people, like all the ones that you're like, she'll come. It's always me. Like in any church I've ever been a part of, they're like, she'll do it. Like, she'll do whatever we ask. It's the same 20% of people, right? And we beat our head against the wall and we ask people to come and we ask people to serve their city. And we come away as leaders very disappointed and frustrated at the response. Okay. So I'm going to show you this quote out of a book called Becoming a Just Church. And I'm going to read it. Very good book. I do want to warn you that it will mess you up. So before you read it, maybe decide if that's something you're ready to do, because it is a very upfront and difficult read in the sense of sort of challenging some of our traditional ways of viewing church. But framing justice as outreach is practically problematic. In our normal ways of thinking about church ministry, we invite people to participate in outreach based on their personal preferences and passions. Agreed? Yes. People passionate about youth ministry sign up for youth outreach. That is not me. Okay. People fired up to serve others head to the park, give out free water. Evangelists head door to door to engage their neighbors in intentional spiritual conversations. There is something for everyone, and everyone gets to choose the outlet that keyword suits them. When we frame justice as one of the options on the outreach menu of church life, church members sign up for opportunities to do justice by checking a box in that bulletin. If justice is an option on the outreach menu, that means that justice has now become optional for everyone. So what we're doing, and this is from good intentions and probably just unknowingly, we're saying, hey, here's 10 things that our church needs you to do. In all reality, it's probably 200 things that you actually need people to do. And I know this because I run a nonprofit. We sit in a room and say, okay, we have 300 things we need. What are the top 10 things, right? So, and we make a list, and it's like, we need you to greet, we need you to hold babies, and oh yeah, we need you to go feed prostitutes in the city. Well, guess where the line is gonna line up? More than likely what? Holding babies, right? Now, not me. My church, this is full disclosure, sent out a text to me and said, hey, can you serve in the children's department? And I texted back, can I scrub toilets? I'm just not a kid person. And they were like, for real? And I was like, totally. I will come up there and scrub. I will do anything else except for hold a baby, right? So, but what happens is people choose based on their preferences and the biggest thing, their comfort, and then say, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do to serve. And those are all ways of serving, holding babies, greeting people at doors, setting up church, tearing down church, serving the, that's, yes, across the board, technically, those are all ways that you can serve. But what happens in this model is that the most vulnerable in our cities are never, ever the ones that people are lining around the block to jump in and serve, because we've made it a programmed approach without the knowledge and the transformation needed for people to feel compelled to do those things. And that's why we launch out and do these crazy outreach initiatives, and 6 months later, we don't have the fuel to do them anymore. Well, we have to stop doing that, because as someone who's on the other side, working with vulnerable populations, their ideas of the church are not great. I'm just shooting you straight. It's the last place they want to be. Their ideas of the church are, they roll in, stick around for a little while, and roll out, and we never see them again. We're going to talk about that. That's broken, you guys. We have to fix it. That cannot be the reputation of the church among the poor. Because when Jesus walked the earth, his highest reputation was found where? Among the poor. That's the religious leaders and the churchy people actually didn't like him. It was the poor that esteemed him and that sought after him and that chased him in every city that he was. So it's flipped, and we've got to do the work to fix it. We have to look at that and say, this is broken. So why does that happen? Well, because justice is not just something we do. Justice requires a transformation of our hearts. We cannot just say, oh, I'm supposed to love the poor, so let me go out on a Tuesday and do that. But we do that to ourselves, don't we? We make it a checkbox, and we're like, well, I'm supposed to be doing this, so I'm going to go try and do this. And raise your hand if this is true, that it feels awkward and unfitting and you don't know where to start, or you don't know where you're supposed to do it, and it's never the easy decision. You're too busy. Raise your hand if you've been that way. Let's just be honest. Yeah, it's okay. Totally. Freedom. This is the freedom breakout, okay? So the reason for that is because what it requires to actually move the needle of justice in your city and in people's lives is transformation in you first. And I don't mean transformation at salvation, because obviously when we receive Jesus, we are transformed, but we also know that we have access to this ongoing transformation, right? This sort of every day Jesus is making us more like him than the day before. And we have the ability to go to him and say to him, hey, I need to be broken when it comes to injustice. Why do I not feel this list of things? Why do I not feel drawn to it? What's going on in me? What needs to change? What needs to be transformed? What is blocking me from seeing people the way that you see them? All of these questions that we can take to the Father and he can begin to transform us. That is my story. I didn't start the hub because for my entire life, all I wanted to do was serve the poor. In fact, in some ways, I was the opposite. I was oblivious to the needs that were around me most of my life until Jesus intersected me and transformed me and gave me his eyes. And then it turned into from a checklist thing to, no, this is the thing. No matter what my job is, no matter what I'm paid to do, now I know what I know, which is that Jesus gave me his eyes to see people. And now I know that that's actually the only thing that matters. And so when I come across a person's life and injustices exist, it's a simple math equation that says, well, I'm called to all these things because I'm called to that person. That's a transformation that has to happen in us all the time, ongoing. And it's a transformation that has to happen in the people in our churches. That transforms them from doing to being people who are justice-centric. And you may be thinking, like, not my people, right? Like, this is a tall hill to climb, right? But the reality is that nothing's impossible with God. And that this is the very thing. I have picked this water up, like, literally 25 times and never taken a sip. It's the very thing that we're called to as the church. And it's on us as leadership to sort of remind ourselves of that and grab onto this idea that, hey, I need to be transformed when it comes to these topics, when it comes to serving the poor or seeing vulnerabilities or seeing the broken. And I don't just mean the broken like the neighbor next door who doesn't know Jesus. I do mean that. But I mean those on the outcasts of society, those who have been pushed to the edges of our city, they are for us. There are people. And so what closes that chasm? Well, transformation is what closes that chasm. The work of God in our lives, being willing to own and ask for forgiveness and confess and change and learn and study and wrap our hearts around the very things that God calls us to. He will transform you to such a degree that this becomes who you are. Maybe you don't do what I do, right? I'm not saying everyone quit your job and come do what I do. But what I am saying is that in any role that you're playing in your city, you can be a person of justice as you do the work of expanding God's kingdom on the earth. So, is the church called to justice? And everyone said, yes, right? Like, that's the point of that whole section, is that we are called as the church. We are uniquely positioned to actually move the needle, to be the people in our city that people look to when things go wrong. And it's a good question to ask. If your church ceased to exist today, would your city know? Would your city even know it? Would there be a deficit? Or would it just be, this happens all the time. Churches get planted, churches end. Well, the way we flip that answer is we stop focusing just on planting a church and instead focus on our city. God will plant your church. God will bring people through your doors. I know Vance eloquently says the order of planting a church, right? How it's traditionally been one way, and they're trying to sort of reorient what it looks like to go into a city and be a missionary first. This is what this is, right? But it takes transformation. And then from leadership's perspective, it takes calling people to be transformed and creating the environments where that can happen. And we're going to talk about that in a second. Okay, the next thing we have to redefine is the word poverty. Because I think when it comes to vulnerable populations in any city, mostly at the root of all those vulnerabilities, which let's take a second. In your context, in your city where you're from, can you shout out some vulnerable populations that you're aware of? Homeless? Drug addicts? Mentally ill? Yep, all right. Yep. Refugees? Did I hear you say Southern Baptist? Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Orphans? Yeah, okay. So we understand, you know, there's this sort of expounded definition in Luke where the word poor, if you look up what it actually means, it actually is a little bit wider than just materially poor. Okay, so it is outcasts of society, people whose decisions have pushed them outside of religious circles. In Jesus's time, it was women, children, diseased. So we understand when I say the poor, what I really mean is sort of that expanded idea of vulnerable populations. So often what I run into in working with churches, once we get over the hurdle of that church saying, I don't know if we're called to justice, we're a little, you know, scared of that. The second thing that I run into quite often is what role does the church or should the church play in poverty alleviation? All right, so actually alleviating the poverty in people's lives. Where does the church, because often we think things in that category are sort of relegated to social organizations. Do you agree? Yeah, like, I know that what we run into a lot is a church in our city, a homeless individual will walk into their church and guess who they call? Me. They're like, hey, there is a homeless man in our lobby. And I'm like, sweet. And they're like, can you come talk to him? And I'm like, no, you can talk to him, right? But I think we sort of have categorized things in the poverty world or poverty alleviation as the job of the place we partner with and give money to so that we can call them. I jokingly call myself the homeless police in my city. If they're cutting up somewhere, guess who finds out about it? Me. People call me all the time. I need you to come down here and help. I'm like, no, you can, right? Like you can. So we want to, I think part of the problem is our definition of poverty. So I want to kind of unpack a new way of thinking when it comes to poverty. So this chart shows you, this is sort of, and this is very limited, but it shows you that if you believe the primary cause of poverty is these things on the left, then you will do these things on the right. That's pretty fundamental. Whatever we think the actual problem is what we will aim at fixing. Okay, so a few of these, if we think it's a lack of knowledge, we will educate people. If we believe that one specific one I want to point out is the personal sins of the poor, we will evangelize and disciple the poor. This is a big one in the evangelical world. There is a very big assumption that because you are existing in vulnerability, you must not know who? Jesus. And the problem with this is that this actually doesn't work for the rest of the world, right? This is a really messed up way of thinking, all right? If we believe it's a lack of material resources, we will just give material resources. That's a real traditional one too. Someone needs their bills paid, so our church looks at our budget and says, oh, we can do that. We paid the bill, all right? So this just shows us that often we diagnose a problem and fix that problem. Okay. And typically what comes to mind when you hear poverty are things that fall into these categories: deficits of material things, material resources, sin, you know, personal sins of the person involved. We kind of throw out all of these ideas of what poverty is. And most of our ideas are a lack of something. But when you talk to people who are existing in poverty, like I do every day, they'll get to the fact that they don't have a house or they don't have these material resources. But what they typically will say first, what it feels like to exist in their world, is they feel lonely and isolated and depressed and stressed out and forgotten. Those are the actual bigger things that matter to them. The material stuff honestly, for most of the people that I walk with, sure, would they love to be housed 100%? And do we work at that 100%? But the reality is, four walls and a ceiling doesn't change very much. Because poverty is actually more than material. On the next slide, poverty is bigger than a lack of material resources. It's more than a material problem. If that weren't the case, then wealthy people would not struggle. Think about it. If material resources is the only part of the equation when it comes to poverty, then we should get all of our material resources and needs met and be like hunky-dory. But is that the case? No. In fact, more money, more. Hey, yeah, all right. That's a very real thing. So we have to understand this is about more than material resources. Poverty is primarily about relational brokenness. Anyone ever read the book When Helping Hurts? Great. I think it's like the Bible and some other spiritual books, When Helping Hurts. Like, it's like the greatest book to read. We'll also mess you up if you've never read it. But they give a new definition of poverty. On the next slide, I'll show you that poverty is primarily a brokenness of four relationships. Next slide. There we go. God, self, others, and creation. All right? These four relationships highlight that we are human beings. We're multifaceted, which requires a multifaceted approach when it comes to our healing. When these four relationships are functioning the way God intended, we are firing on all cylinders. But looking at those, and I'm going to unpack them in a second, what we understand is that if poverty is essentially a brokenness of relationship in one or more of these key areas, then all of us are susceptible to some level of poverty. All of us have walked through some version of poverty. Because all of us have experienced brokenness in one of these relationships, right? So what we know to be true is that all the way back in Genesis 3, sin enters the world. And what we see is these four relationships immediately get broken, all right? So first, the relationship with God between Adam and Eve. What's the first thing that happens? God has to say to them what? Where are you? They had unhindered interaction with him, and now all of a sudden, there's brokenness there, and he's looking for them. Two, self. What's the first thing that happened after Adam and Eve sinned? What changed? Shame. They all of a sudden knew that they were naked, right? In the South, we say naked or naked. Naked means you don't have clothes on. Naked means you don't have clothes on or you're getting in trouble. That's just a little breakdown, just a little context for you. That's a real Southern story I just told you. Others, our relationship with others was broken. What's the first thing they did? They blamed each other. And then creation, what did they lose access to? The garden. So, yeah, everything they had, they lost access to. So sin entered the world, and so then did poverty. Because these four relationships were broken. And what that means is that when it comes to alleviating poverty, this is not an us and then kind of them kind of equation. This is not we are showing up to help you. We are showing up because we have and you don't. We are showing up because we're fixed and you're broken. This helps us understand that we are the same. Materially, we may be different. Right? We may have homes and but the reality is at the core, we are all equal. This is a mutually broken situation. So it allows for us to enter into these relationships from a different perspective that says, man, I'm susceptible to poverty. And we may look at these and go, right now in my own life, some of these relationships are not reconciled. And we may realize like, oh man, that means that in that sphere of my life, I'm existing in an impoverished way, right? So being that poverty, next slide, is a brokenness of relationship, relational reconciliation and healing is the actual, go to the next one. I don't have enough time for that. Is the actual deepest need. So if brokenness of relationship is the problem, then the actual deepest need to heal it is relational reconciliation. And I don't know if you remember this verse, in the New Testament that says we have been given the ministry of reconciliation. So thank you for coming, everyone. I'm just kidding. The reality is that's the equation. Are we called to alleviate poverty? Well, poverty is a relational brokenness and requires relational reconciliation. Then yes, we are called, uniquely positioned to do that, because it is the only ministry that we've been given responsibility of, is reconciling relationships, the ministry of reconciliation. Recognizing the fact that God is reconciling the whole earth back to him through Jesus and giving us that ministry. And it goes on to say, as if God were making his appeal through who? Us. And so we look at poverty and we say, oh man, I don't know if we have a role there. And so we leave it for someone else. When in reality, the deepest need that exists in that world is relational reconciliation. Back to the Father, back to themselves, others, and creation. So when biblical justice is lived out, the church operates in its calling of being ministers of that reconciliation. That's what biblical justice looks like. That's not social justice, but biblical justice is when the church executes that call to reconcile relationships. And at the bottom of poverty, no matter what population we're talking about, we can recognize that at the root of those things is a brokenness of relationship with God, self, others, and creation. So yes, we are called to it. All right, there's my pitch for Are We Called to It? Now we're going to get into some more practical things. So if you could go to the slide that says Moving Your Church to Engage the Poor. Yep, there we go. I want to leave you with some tools, because I think we could talk about this all day and, you know, rally you around scripture and we'd all feel really good. And then you'd walk out and be like, oh, I don't know how to do that. So I want to give you some tools. So the first step, unfortunately, it starts with who? You, me, you, leaders, the leaders that exist in your church. A lot of times what happens is pastors or leadership will sit in a this actually happened at one of the gatherings. Someone came up to me after and said, I did that. You'll be sitting in this room and you'll be texting that one person on your staff that's crazy enough to do stuff. And you're like, hey, I'm going to get a recording to this because you need to listen to this so that you can do it. And I said that one time and someone came up to me afterwards, like, I literally had texted someone in my staff like, hey, I need you to get your head around this so you can do it. But the best option is that, and the option that will move your church the quickest is that you are changed. Some of, in our city, the location that I run in, oh, just lost an earring. Let me take this other one out. In the one that I run in Louisiana, some of our most invested partners in our city, churches who are actually moving the needle, are, I can look at them, and there's about 15 or 20 that come to mind, and I can draw a line directly to the fact that anytime justice work is being done, guess who's there? The pastor. Every time. The pastor, the key leadership, not because it's something on their agenda to do, but because they've been transformed and any opportunity they can get to be a part, they're there. There's a direct correlation here, because is God calling you to do things? Yes, but he doesn't want to use you at the risk of you not being transformed. He wants to transform you. So I always say for leaders, like, what in your city keeps you up at night? What are the things about where you live that you just can't shake, the brokenness that bothers you the most? And if you're sitting there thinking, I don't know, that's a great place to start, is to ask the Lord, why don't I know the answer to that? If you're like, I don't ever stay up at night. Well, me neither. Thank you, melatonin, right? But what are the things that bother you as in your city that impact people's lives negatively? What are the injustices that you feel uniquely sort of pulled towards, but maybe scared of? You know, those are the questions that I like leaders to ask themselves, because it matters. It matters where you feel called, right? So when you start with you, when you start as a transformed person who now can wrap themselves around justice personally, apart from your church, because that's what happened with me. I run a massive organization in Louisiana. It's the biggest organization in our sphere of what we do. But it didn't start with me going to school to start a nonprofit. It started personally in me being transformed and broken. It started out of the trunk of my car, whether anyone wanted to be a part of it or not. I didn't care. I didn't know what I was doing. When people are like, how did you start the hub? I always say, accidentally. I did not set out to do this. But what happened was a fire was turned on in me that I couldn't ignore. And it's a lot easier. And what you see here, it's a more biblical approach to leading people to say, come with me as I do this. Because guess who did that? Jesus did. He also sent, but he didn't send them without them having seen him do it. Actually, this morning in my Bible reading is when Jesus called his disciples, you know, pulled them apart to send them out. And we always talk about that moment where like he pulled them away to send them out. There's a little thing that I've missed every time I read it. He pulled them away and said that he intended for them to, one, first be with him. And then he would send them with his authority. Well, what that means is we've seen Jesus do these things. Jesus is a come with me as I do them. And then sends us out of that, right? We aren't sent to be like Jesus without a model. He did it. So as leaders, often we'll say, I heard this awesome thing. I'm sending you to do it. And then if there's any issues and people come to you, ask you questions, you're like, oh, I don't know. I've never done it, right? So we want to be leaders that say, hey, come with me as I do this. Do I have it all figured out? No. But come with me and let's figure this out together. Let's see what it looks like to engage in justice together. Right? So it starts with you. The next thing is please, please, please do your homework. Okay. Do not charge out of this breakout session and make a plan tonight for a new outreach in your city. Do not do that. Okay. I can guarantee you, I don't know how long it'll take, but it'll fail. Okay. So we want to start from the posture of learning and friendship. Friendship and knowledge of those that we feel called to invest in is the first and most primary part of this. Before we launch out and do something, we need to know the people that we feel called to reach. We need to know them. What do they actually need? Because what happens is, well, we know what happens when you assume, can't say it here, right? But it's true. We show up in these dark places in our city with a lot of assumed knowledge of a people group. We go in with all of that assumed knowledge, and then we come away disappointed when they didn't respond to our assumed assigned knowledge. When people aren't just like super excited that you're there and you're like, how could you not be excited? We're bringing you free food. This is a great example, but we had a church call one time and say, hey, there's this apartment complex close to our church that appears impoverished. That told me all I needed to know, right? They looked at it from the red light. Those people are poor, right? So they were bothered, which is awesome. They were bothered by that. They gathered a bunch of people. They planned a big free food outreach. They went into this apartment and they started doing this once a month, giving out free food, giving out free food, giving out free food. And they call us because they're like, hey, we found out that the people who live there are selling the food that we're bringing them. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And so with some digging, what we found out was primarily the population there received enough food stamps, I don't know what it's called here, but food support, that they didn't need the extra food, but they were getting the extra food because nobody asked. And so they were turning around and using that resource to get the things that they actually what? Needed. And in some cases, to get things they didn't need, right? So, and they were all frustrated and like, we're done. We're not doing this anymore. Nobody appreciates it. And I said to this pastor, I said, what is the name of one person that lives there? They didn't know one. And I said, okay, problem one is that you assumed a lot of things without knowing a single person that lives there. You assumed they needed a set of things that they didn't actually need. And the biggest assumption we make is that because they're in poverty, they need the gospel, right? Like when we go into a situation like that and assume that every single person here is living in spiritual darkness, what we miss is that God is at work everywhere we go and that there are people in that community that God is already using, that God is our people of peace, right? Who God has planted there that are already doing his work there. And to assume anything different is a massive misconception. So do your homework, get to know people, and then respond out of that. If I came up to you, we don't know each other. I don't want to know your name because it helps with this example. If I came up to you, I do want to know your name, but you know what I'm saying? You weren't supposed to tell me. And I said, hey, didn't ask you your name. I was like, hey, I feel like you need blah, 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 blah. What would you feel? Judged? Yeah. Off-put? Yeah. Okay, well, we're doing it to people all the time. We're doing it all the time. We're doing it to vulnerable populations all the time. We're saying, I don't need to know your name to know you need this. You would never, ever, if someone did that to me, people have done that to me when people are like, I feel like you, and I'm like, oh, that's hard for me because you don't even know my name. Right? So do your homework, know the people you're wanting to serve, know what they actually need, operate from friendship. You, when you are friends and you have knowledge, if me and you, Nicole, thank you, are friends, then I have the right to come into your life and say, hey, I want to help you with this thing that I know you need. Jesus showed us how to do this at the well, the woman at the well, right? What happens there is he encounters this woman and he draws out her actual need. Her actual need was not physical water. But he says to her, if you drink from the water I have, you will never thirst again. But he says that after pointing out that she clearly had a problem, that something in her life was not being quenched because she had relationship after relationship after relationship. So Jesus, knowing her, gave her the thing she actually needed, which was satiation in him, which was the end of the chase of being satisfied. Isn't that the coolest thing? He didn't say to her, I'm the bread of life. He didn't. He said, I'm the living water. And it meant more to her because of her situation and her life that if I hitch my wagon to this dude, you mean that I don't have to chase down satisfaction anymore? It meant more to her because he operated from a place of knowledge. Now, we're not Jesus, so we can't know that just walking up on somebody like he did. We have to get to know them, right? So, make space for the poor, please. Friendship with the poor transforms us and informs us, basically, is the point. Make space for the poor. Transform thinking says that the vulnerable in my city belong in my church. Not the vulnerable in my city are people for us to serve. They belong in your community. Because again, back to relational brokenness, one of the biggest factors in the lives of the poor and the vulnerable is that they don't belong anywhere. So make space for the people that you're serving in your city, in your actual community. Give them a seat at the table. Welcome them to your church. Make it possible for them to engage in what God's doing in your community. Give them a position. Let them greet at the door, whatever it takes. Give them a place to come and belong and be transformed and be sent out into the very places that they came from. All right? Make space. All right. We're going to go out to there's theology around it. Here's another really practical. Next slide, I think. Uh-oh. Are we missing a slide? Go back one. Nope. All right, skip it. All right. So another practical resource I want to leave you with is just go to the sin relief slide. I want to talk to you a little bit before we leave about sin relief. All right. So I don't know if you know this, but sin relief exists to equip the church to do the work of compassion ministry where you are, right? I think what sin relief is typically known for are mission trips, which we do have awesome mission trips, and disaster relief, which we do that. But the bigger call of sin relief is to equip you to do the work of compassion ministry where you are. So sin relief is a cooperative effort between the IMB and NAM that exists to help you serve vulnerable communities. And we have five focus areas, if you want to skip to that slide, that Sin Relief focuses in. Strengthening communities, that includes poverty, material poverty, things like that, community development, care for refugees, protecting children and families, fighting human trafficking, and responding to crisis. These are the five specific lanes of Sin Relief. And in all five of these lanes are a ton of resources on the website for you to learn more. And there's an ambassador in each of these lanes that you can reach out to specifically to get assistance in doing ministry in these five focus areas. I'm the fight human trafficking one. And as the ambassadors of these five, our whole job is when you email and ask questions or reach out for help, we come alongside of you and equip you to know how to do this work in your community. On the next slide, I want to give you is this not the updated one with the QR? Probably not. Okay. I'm going to flip this around after, and if you want this QR to this resource that I'm talking about, we can. There's a resource on Sin Relief's website called Establishing a Local Ministry. And it's a guide. It's a field guide for how to start compassion ministry in your community. And I helped write it along with a few other practitioners of Sin Relief. And I would say it's probably one of the best next steps that I could tell you to take. You can find it by going to sinrelief.org and clicking on the focus areas. Click on strengthening communities, and it's right there at the bottom. You click, you put your email in, and it'll send it to you. Included in that is a city assessment, kind of helps you learn your city, do your homework, get to know the populations that exist, and then it walks you through how to sort of start ministry in those five focus areas. And I wanted to leave you with that because it is, one, free. And it's a resource out of NAM. It's something that exists for all of you to engage in on the Sin Relief website. And so I wanted to leave with the most practical thing, which is a step you could take when you get home, is to just go and explore the Sin Relief website, all the resources that exist there. That Establishing a Local Ministry guide is the best next step for you to take. Like, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I want to go deeper, that is the best resource that I could put you towards. Also punch you if you need that. But in summary, what I hope that you're leaving with today is a reminder of who we are as the church, a reminder of what we're called to, a reminder of what we're capable of. We're capable of being the best people in the city when it comes to injustice. We're capable of being the church that when something happens, the city says, we need to call fill in the blank. We're capable of that because we are attached to God, the God of justice. And if you are wanting to take more steps in that, you can hang around after. You can scan this QR code. I can give you my contact information. We exist for you after this to take the next steps. So I'm going to pray for us, and then we're going to end. God, we thank you so much for the opportunity to come together and think through things that are so hard for us to understand sometimes, and think through the things that you're calling us to, and confess where we're missing the mark, and confess where we have brokenness in our own lives. And we're just thankful that we can come to you honest. We can come to you and say, this is overwhelming, or I don't understand this, or I don't want to do that, God. We can come to you honest and ask for you to transform us. And so I pray, God, more than anything else, that we would be a transformed people. God, that we would be people whose eyes are turned on to injustice, that we would be people who cannot get away from what you're calling us to when it comes to the broken. God, I pray that you would make us skillful. You would give us discernment and wisdom for how to walk this out with our churches. And I pray, God, that in every city that these churches exist, that they would be the happiest people in that city. God, that people would be drawn to you because of their joy and drawn to you because of their courage in the cities that they're in. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you.